I am back on the road right at the eastern edge of Indiana, getting ready to go into Ohio. It's been a great couple of days of travel down through southern, southwestern Wisconsin, down into Illinois, across the center part of Illinois, south of Peoria, all the way across into Indiana, and then across almost to Ohio, where I've stopped. Obviously, I stopped a couple different times. I'm going to talk about that in this podcast. That hissing sound you hear is me making coffee. Often, I will pull into a McDonald's to use the free Wi-Fi, check the email, and do all the things. And what's interesting is then I make my own coffee because my own coffee is better. So my apologies to McDonald's. I've purchased plenty of coffee and breakfast items over the years, so I don't feel too bad. Boy, what a difference being on the road is from just being stationary, and I am having a fantastic time. So what I've decided I'm going to do in this podcast is I'm going to make a couple of different installments. So I'm going to talk for a short period of time here, and then the next time I stop, I'll talk for a short period of time, and so on, until we get to the end of, 30 minutes or so of audio. In podcast 1108, what am I going to call this? Oh, yeah. America's Heartland, because that's where we are. And I have, you know, it isn't all just sweetness and light and gee whiz, isn't this great? I always get a ton out of visiting and traveling through these areas. And 2 years ago, I traveled, I did the lake tour. I called that the Industrial Revolution in Reverse Tour, where I went east across the Great Lakes from Wisconsin and Michigan all the way across. And I got a lot out of that because that part of the country was settled first as we moved west. And as we moved east, we got in closer and closer to the birthplace of the Industrial Revolution in North America, which was Pawtucket, Rhode Island. This time, I am cutting east across these central farm districts in Illinois and Indiana, and it is incredible, especially at this time. You can come through here in September or October after the fields have been cleared, or early spring when they're getting ready to plant, and it looks like a wasteland. You come through here in August, right before harvest, and it is the land of abundance. The smell is fantastic. It's the air is so clean, and there are so many plants. It's just amazing. So I'll talk about that in this podcast 1108. So I am basically driving through a vast garden, and the feeling is incredible. The colors are incredible. The deep green of the soybean plants and lighter green of the corn and the trees, and how they change from one state to the next, one region to the next. The roads in Indiana, let's say, are a little tighter, and the trees grow right up to the edge of the road, and they're different kinds of trees as opposed to Illinois, which is just everything is cleared. And these huge fields are incredible, just incredible. They are basically 3,000 acre gardens. And it makes me think of GardenGurusMN.com. These are the guys that can help you with your own garden. Maybe you do want to plant some corn or some peppers or some things like that, and you need a little help with that. But as long as you're going to do that, why not put, especially if you have some space, put a nice little garden of some kind near it where you can sit back there and just relax. There's something about this feeling of agriculture and being in these fields where you're driving along and the corn is above your head. It's above the truck. it's fantastic. It's just a great feeling. So if you want to kind of recreate that experience, at least on a smaller level in your own yard, if you have the room, or you just want to garden, you want to stage some real estate, you want to stage some commercial property, you want to maybe get yourself ready next year for gardening, contact Garden Gurus MN. And thanks, guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Yeah, that's the big takeaway. The idea that, and I hear this all the time on YouTube, especially survivalists who will say every week there's going to be a shortage of food. Now it's because of the fact that the Russians nixed the trade deal, the grain trade deal with Ukraine, and that is built up into this apocalyptic moment where we're all going to go hungry. And when you drive through this part of the country and you see the amount of output, it is literally a horn of plenty. I mean, as I said, from, and I mean, technically, it's not just Wisconsin and Minnesota and Illinois, Indiana, Ohio. It's also Kansas, and it's Washington State when you move east of the mountains, the Yakima Valley, or the Valley of California going from the southern part of the state to the northern part of the state. And other places where agriculture is on a scale that few people realize. This country has hundreds and hundreds of thousands of acres under cultivation. I don't have the exact number. But the thing I find interesting is that here in Indiana, and of course Illinois, which I refer to as the heartland, and Wisconsin, but especially when you hit Illinois and you're down south of Peoria on, I think it was 136, which cuts directly east and west across the state from somewhere around Dubuque, I think it's 136, you're just blown away at the size of these farms. They are enormous, and they stretch, and they stretch to the horizon. And everywhere you go in this part of the country, just draw a big circle around the Midwest, all the way from Youngstown, Ohio, and parts of Western Pennsylvania, all the way down across into Tennessee and Kentucky and Illinois and Ohio and Indiana, and up to the North and South Dakota, Minnesota, and of course, Wisconsin. You will see just mostly rural agricultural areas. It's a huge thing, the agriculture output of this country. For example, everyone's all upset about wheat. The United States is the number one exporter in the world of soybeans, and yet we also are the number one producer of wheat. So we have so much. We have so much soybeans. We're exporting corn and soybeans, feed corn, I'm sure, as well as soy for all the different purposes it's used for, not just in the United States, but in the world. We also produce the largest amount of wheat in this country, and you don't see that much of it growing. I mean, we see a lot of hay in the Midwest growing, but for all the talk about drought and all these horrible things that are happening, this part of the country is busting at the seams with corn and soybean. It's fantastic. So that's going to, my coffee's ready. I'm going to pour myself a cup of coffee and sit here at the McDonald's and probably swing the door open, contemplate the, get the map out and contemplate my trip through Ohio to try to replicate the same thing. And I'm going to talk next about the, so when you go through Illinois, the towns are kind of sparse across larger distances apart from the towns. As you get east, it compresses a little bit, particularly in Indiana. You come to a little town every 20 or 30 miles or 15 or 10 miles. Whereas, I don't know what it's going to be like in Iowa, because it's been a long time since I, for example, I just went through Muncie, Indiana, and I got a great story about my dad in Muncie. I haven't been to Muncie since then, and that was years and years ago. So it was kind of fun to roll through Muncie. But there are towns, there's towns of 500, 1,500, 1,200. Then you get to the county seats with maybe 5,000 or 10,000. And then you get to kind of these cow towns that grew up into industrial powerhouses. And many of them still are. Lafayette, Indiana is a great example. Obviously, some towns are better than others in terms of their growth these days. But those are the towns that are, I don't know, 20 or 30,000. And the point here is, right up to the borders, even of Indianapolis, which is a big city, they are farming. There are fields run right up to the borders of these towns, and that's also true in most of the more urban areas, even with the suburbs. As you get to the outer edges, you start to see this this incredible growth, and most people pay it no mind. You drive to the store, you drive to wherever, you go see some friends, you see some cornfields, you don't even think about it. Those cornfields stretch as far as the eye can see across the horizon to the next state and the next state and the next state and the next state and the next state over and the next state over and so on and so on. It's pretty amazing. Not to mention Canada. I just think it's probably one of the biggest takeaways so far from this trip. And I'll end this little installment there. And we'll talk more about it or something else when we get into and through Ohio. On the way to New York State. Well, I've exchanged the relative peace of the McDonald's parking lot in wherever I was to the cacophony of the Loves in Upper Sandusky, Ohio, along the, I guess you could call it the freeway. First it's a four lane with a median, and then it becomes kind of a freeway. Route 30 East, US 30 East. As I angle up towards Pennsylvania and then plan to kind of roll into upstate New York, the far south western tip of New York, on the way to Rochester, New York, and then from there, when I pick up my power station from the Campulence man, all bets are off. We'll do some camping. And we'll be back to the crackle of the fire. Very interesting thing, traveling through Indiana. You know, we used to make light of the fact that in Illinois, gas was always more expensive than Indiana. So you went over to Indiana to get the cheap gas. I was shocked to see diesel in Indiana at $4.34 or more. Now, I've done this enough to know what I've been doing is I have been, so if I run the tank down halfway, I fill it back up again at the earliest opportunity for cheap fuel. That way, I'm never in need of fuel and I have to just take what I can get because I always have some wiggle room. So I have come all this way, and I think I've filled up, if you count a half and a half again, I think I filled up twice. So what I'm doing is I'm saying I've consumed two full tanks since I started on the trip. So we're getting good mileage. But here's the thing I noticed. It's really evident with the diesel. The independently owned and operated refueling stations, substantially cheaper. I was shocked because I thought, well, if I have to, because I figure I could make Ohio with the fuel I had, and I checked prices in Ohio, and it was the average price in Ohio was something like $4.05 a gallon, which is high, but okay. I managed to run across an independent station pretty close to the border between, I think it was Union City or somewhere around there, Indiana. And diesel was $3.98. Now that's a big difference in price. And I'm sure there's more to it than that, not just, I think Indiana must have some kind of bizarre state tax, a graduated state tax, depending on demand, or some ridiculous thing. I don't know what, but it isn't fair that, especially in farm communities, that diesel should be so expensive. I mean, I hate to say it's not fair, but you know what I mean. So this gives me an opportunity to talk about the efficacy of independently owned and operated refueling stations, because they do save on fuel and they can pass the savings on to the customers. My favorite is 36 Lynn, the independently owned and operated refueling station in South Minneapolis. They have great locally sourced products in the store, so the store is a great experience. They're down with the community, and they always have been. They do community stuff there, and they're a lot of fun. Check out their Instagram feed at 36 Lynn. Just say hi, get some fuel, buy some candy, get a cup of coffee. They have Peace Coffee there, different flavors, and it's pretty cool. So yeah, you got a little information and a little bit of a plug for 36 Lynn there. But it is true that I made it all the way across to Indiana, which really isn't that wide of a state. And fortunately, because I did it right, I was able to pick and choose where I got the fuel. But what's causing it is there's a momentary. I looked earlier, and I don't really know what happened with the price of oil today. Sorta. It was way down, but it seems like it's popping back up a little bit in after hours trading. So we had it, Brent, at something like $85 or $86 a gallon. I mean, barrel. And then we had Brent even higher, which was weird. And that is causing the spike at the pumps, because they adjust the price almost immediately, I've noticed. When the price of oil futures spikes, they spike. So it's been down and up. The market's down. Usually when the market's down, oil is up a little bit. This time it went with the market as well. Generally speaking, I don't think that the demand is there, even with the production cuts in the Middle Eastern oil cartels, or whatever you want to call them. It's going to make that much of a difference, because China is in serious trouble economically, even though we are seeing an increase in U.S. GDP, it's due primarily to the auto industry, is my understanding, building up inventories after a loss of inventories and parts and so forth because of quote-unquote COVID. A lot of that GDP happened in the auto industry, which was something like 2.4% at last count. But that'll be revised down or up, depending on where they end up, but I don't think the demand in the economy is there. We'll see. I just went to Hardee's here at the Loves. Yeah, that was the other thing I was going to tell you. Rolling east, and I just had a feeling there's going to be a truck stop up here. Because what I've been doing is, first of all, I camped for 4 months, right? So I don't need to camp. Camping is not in, I wouldn't say it's not in the picture right now, but camping is not necessary. And I do like truck stops. It makes me feel, I slept great last night. I was in a truck stop last night. I was in a Flying J, and I slept like a baby. And here I am again at the Loves. There's something about the white noise and everything that just makes it great. And you don't get hassled. It's funny because people always ask me when I say, they say, where do you stay? And I say, I stay at a truck stop. And, well, how do you find them? I say, well, you know, if you are on the back roads, and as you heard earlier, I was on some of the most magnificent back roads in Indiana and Illinois. The corn and the greens, the different color greens, the dark of the soybeans, the lighter color of the greens, the trees. The light, this late summer thing is just incredible. And also seeing these crops right before harvest is just something else indeed. It's a great experience. But what you do is, once you get, if you get near an interstate, you're going to run into a truck stop. And what I'm trying to do is, I'm threading the needle, basically. I am closely watching the map, and I'm sort of on the fly figuring out the best U.S. highways, and not interstates, but U.S. highways, dating back to the early 1920s, after World War I, when they built the National Highway System, the original National Highway System. So we're talking about two-lane highways like Route 8 in Wisconsin, you know, and back in the day, Route 30, U.S. Route 30 through Ohio was a two-lane for sure. Whatever the highway is. So when you're on those either state two-lane roads or U.S. highways, these days the U.S. highways are a little bit more built up. But if you get anywhere near one of the interstates, you're going to run into a truck stop. Or it's going to be within 7 or 8 miles down the interstate if necessary. So the first night, I did the rest stop. And I had the heebie-jeebies. I don't like rest stops, but I was also keyed up because that was the first night of travel. Last night, I did the Flying J, and I didn't do a restaurant because I don't even remember if they had a restaurant there. Oh, yeah, it was a Subway, which I, you know, I'm not having a sandwich for dinner. I had some of that dried instant. You put water in, boiling water in. What did I have? Fried rice. Chicken fried rice. Somehow that's so much better than a Subway sandwich. And tonight I thought, I'm going to treat myself to a shake and a cheeseburger. So I did. And that was great. And I just drank a whole bunch of really cold ice water, which is really messing my throat up. But truck stops in general. So last night a guy asked for a jump. And I have a hot shot. So I gave him the hot shot. And we fired up his car. It was great. Nice to help somebody. But generally speaking, truck stops are pretty much places of business for truckers, primarily. You can hear that. People think that they are some kind of horrible experience, that there's prostitutes in the parking lots and all this other stuff. If there are, I wouldn't know. I don't think I've ever seen a quote-unquote lot lizard. I know that they exist, but truck stops especially loves, and it depends on how new they are and where they are. If you're talking about, you know, rural Utah or Wyoming or someplace like this, you know, it's trucks. And these guys are exhausted. They go in, they get something to eat, they go out to their trucks, and they go to sleep. There, you know, there's no, I haven't seen any fights in the parking lots. The worst cluster of truck stops I had ever been to was in Ohio, and I'm not quite sure where it was. I think it was someplace near Cleveland, somewhere in that really industrial part of Ohio. There were like 5 or 6 truck stops because that's one of the most heavily trafficked areas. So it was a turnpike, and then at the conjunction of another interstate going one way and yet another. It was like 3 interstates going different directions and the turnpike. And every one of those truck stops was jam-packed. This was years ago. And it was a little, it was very, they were very dark. The lights, they didn't have a lot of lighting. I went to a Waffle House. It was a little sketchy. It felt sketchy, even though I don't know. But there were so many truck stops there, and they were just worn out. They were just beat to hell. And it just gave you a feeling that things weren't completely together, right? In general, that is not the experience at a truck stop. First of all, you have now, they call them travel stops, which is funny because TA was Travel America back in the day. So they were kind of set up for both truckers and people and, you know, travelers, like car travelers. And Love's is set up that way too. They've got a section for car travelers and they've got a section for truckers. truckers are on one side, the car travelers on the other, and the services that serve the truckers are on the trucker side. So fuel, service. There's not a truck wash here, but there's actually a general use truck wash, which I'm going to hit tomorrow before I take off. You know, you pay and you pull into this giant tunnel and it washes your trucks. I'm pretty excited about that. And looking forward to, I'll be in Pennsylvania by noon tomorrow. So, and then I'll probably be in Pennsylvania. Well, we'll see if I can make it to New York State tomorrow. I'm not in a hurry. But this goes to show you, I mean, in literally 2 days, I'm halfway across the country from Wisconsin, all back roads. If you do it right, if you really plan where you're going and how you're going to go, and I'm doing a couple of different things. I chose to avoid the cities because I want to see what's going on with crops, which I talked a little bit about. If you plan a little bit, and I admit I do a lot of stuff on the fly, but it's only because I've been doing this so long that I don't have to write out every single thing that I do. I can kind of figure it out on the fly. So I have two things that I'm doing. One, I'm checking out the crops and everything. And the second thing I'm doing is trying to avoid any metropolitan area. So it gets a little tricky in these highly populated areas like northern Ohio and central Indiana. There's a lot of little towns that are, industrial. They started out as cow towns, farm towns, and they advanced into sort of industrial powerhouses, and they're usually small towns, 50,000, 40,000, towns like Muncie, and others that are in a little bit better shape than Muncie, they're urban centers. So I don't want to hang out in urban centers. I certainly don't want to drive through one. So the wrinkle with me is I'm purposefully avoiding the urban centers. And I'll continue to do that. And that's going to get a little challenging as we go through the Youngstown-Erie corridor. Especially in Pennsylvania, which has mountains, right? So, we'll see how that goes tomorrow. But that's the plan. Good night from the truck stop. Now, I do have some people to thank for donations to the Bob Davis podcast. When I am moving, it is really, really, really important. Mindy Collins, thank you for $20. I appreciate that. She's down there in Florida, and it's always great to hear from her. I mentioned Wayne Nelson the other day. I hope I did mention you properly. $25. An honorable mention, Winner's Circle. Definitely Judy Murphy and Katie Davis, who have really, really, I'll tell you the truth, they donated enough cash to pretty much pay for the fuel for this New England trip, and I am so grateful. If you want to make a donation to the Bob Davis Podcast, do so at thebobdavispodcast.com. You can set yourself up for a monthly donation thing, like Travis, my friend, $5 a month, or whatever you want to do, because it's going to go right in the tank. And there is no amount too small or too large to make me happy. So thank you so much. If you don't want to give money, then subscribe to the Bob Davis Podcast on iTunes, or you can subscribe to it on Spotify, or you can subscribe to the Bob Davis Podcast YouTube channels at the Bob Davis Podcasts on YouTube and or Instagram. So there you go. So live from the Love's Truck Stop in Upper Sandusky, Ohio. Bob Davis Podcast 1108. Back on the road again through America's heartland.